WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with NPR's Bob Edwards. Bob is the host of NPR's Morning Edition. He's written a new book about his radio friendship with the late Red Barber called Fridays with Red. If you're a longtime public radio listener, you remember back to the days before Morning Edition existed, when Bob Edwards co-hosted All Things Considered with Susan Stamberg. As he told us in the first part of our talk, he wasn't originally supposed to host Morning Edition, but the original hosts were fired before the first broadcast because the pilot bombed. Bob was asked to take over the program for 30 days, and then he expected to return to All Things Considered. Those 30 days have already grown to 14 years. I asked Bob if he wanted to stay with Morning Edition.
Once I was into it, I did, because I was on my own now. And, you know, working with Susan was marvelous. I enjoyed it. I have very happy memories of it. But every now and then you got to make a change. And this was, you know, I needed to grow, and it helped me grow. And goodness knows it wasn't the hours that were attractive.
What are your hours?
I get up at 1:30 in the morning, and I'm in the office by 2:30, and I go home at noon or 12:30.
That's a long day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It's actually a long night and a short day.
I go to sleep at 7, and my children tuck me in, and it's tough. You know, they get to stay up, and I have to go to bed. And that's the part I don't like.
What hours do you have for family time?
I get the afternoons, of course, which is real nice in the summer when the children are there. I think in some ways, though, I might get more time with my children than a 9-to-5 dad, because they come home exhausted, and after they've had dinner, the children have maybe a 9 o'clock bedtime, and there's, you know, a very brief window in there. I've got them in the late afternoons and for, you know, an hour in the early evening. So I think possibly I do better that way.
Do you change your hours on the weekend?
Yes, I'm a normal person on the weekend.
Don't you have jet lag all the time then?
Yes, exactly right. That's exactly what it feels like. It's permanent jet lag.
Now, you've said that one of the drawbacks of getting up in the middle of the night is that you're driving through the streets just as the bars are closing.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had some pretty close calls.
Yeah, I've had some that were too close. I got hit one night by a drunk driver.
On the way to work?
Ran a red light, yep. And she was a 19-year-old, and she had a fight with a boyfriend or something. I don't know, she was drunk and just blasted me right in the passenger side. And a brand new car. I was still on the dealer's tank of gas.
Whoa.
Yeah, totaled it.
No, were you hurt?
No. No, it's a tank, and I always wear seatbelt. So,
did you go to work afterwards?
Not that day. I was shook up, but the next day I did. But I see something every night. I see people with no headlights on. I see people going the wrong way on a one-way street. It's astonishing how many drunk drivers there are out there. I mean, the police have a real problem, and I didn't realize it until I kept those hours. Three times on an interstate I've had people come at me on the wrong side of an interstate. That's really scary. Because then you have to guess real fast, left or right, which way am I going? And you realize that you're trying to second-guess a drunk. There's no logic there.
Well, how afraid of you? How afraid are you of this nightly encounter with drunk drivers on the way to work?
It opens your eyes. I'm very careful. I'm cautious. I don't speed. I keep cool. I look around me.
What was your very first radio job? Or I shouldn't use the word job, maybe. Maybe you didn't get paid at the very beginning, like most people in public radio didn't get paid when they started.
I hung out at a tiny little station in New Albany, Indiana, a commercial station that was right across the river from Louisville, but I don't think the signal reached there unless the breeze was blowing, right? It was a daytimer. And only 1,000 watts, and I went on the air. I hung out every day for a couple of months, and the police came in one day and busted the guy on the air for non-support. And that's how I got into radio. I sat in his chair and took over his program.
Wasn't it paternity support?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a variation on the would-be leading lady, where the real leading lady gets a broken leg.
Uh-huh. And,
yeah. All right. So what was the first show?
Well, it was spinning records. Mm-hmm. And it was doing the
DJ thing. What kind of music?
Easy listening.
Easy listening.
The world's most beautiful music.
Oh, no. Did you like that music?
Well, I jazzed it up a bit. I threw in some Ellington and Basie. They were, Sinatra was about as hip as they got. But I put in a little more up-tempo stuff.
What was the worst stuff you had to play?
Oh, Mantovani, I guess. Very syrupy stuff, with the peeling violins and very lush arrangements and all that.
And what voice did you use to back announce Mantovani?
Oh, I was ordered to use this very, very, I was pontificating. I was, it was very formal. Very, very, very formal. but that was orders. That went with the music, so that's what I had to do. I couldn't be myself. That just never works. You have to be yourself on radio.
Now, you were drafted in 1969, and you ended up anchoring Army broadcasts of the 6 o'clock news in Seoul.
Right.
How did you get the job? Was this the first time you were on the air, or was this after your middle-of-the-road stint?
I was terrified of the Army and because of the war, and I didn't want any part of it. So what I did was, it's the one time that you should not be shy when you're drafted. I told them I was Cronkite. I told them if they didn't have me in broadcasting, boy, were they missing out. I mean, gosh, what a waste of my talent. What I was trying to do is, keep from fighting in Nam. And it worked. I didn't even go to Army school. Right after basic training, they had me doing training tapes in Georgia and later the news in Korea.
So what experience did you really have at that point?
None in television, and that's what I was doing. I was doing radio and television. I was learning television, and the equipment was so old, and Army procedures being what they were, I think anyone who works in real television would say I've yet to learn television.
How objective was the Army broadcast of the news?
They kept their hands off of us because they didn't want to be seen as being heavy-handed. They censored us only where Korean news was. When I was doing something about Korea, they would censor that because they wanted to be diplomatic with the host country. Well, the guys over there didn't want to know about Korea anyway. They wanted to know what was going on in the United States, to the point where the Pentagon Papers were the hot story of the time, and I did a documentary on it, and the Army didn't even read it. They left me completely alone because they didn't want to seem heavy-handed, and it didn't concern Korea, so they didn't care. If I'd been in Nam, it would have been different.
Did you wear a uniform for the broadcast?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Wore my green suit, and I was Army Specialist Bob Edwards.
My guest is Bob Edwards. He's the host of NPR's Morning Edition. He's also just written a new book about Red Barber called Fridays with Red. Now, how did you get to National Public Radio?
I was fired from the Mutual Broadcasting System.
For?
Union activity.
Uh-huh. Were you an organizer or a foreman?
Was and still am.
Uh-huh.
I'm a national vice president of AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists.
Mm-hmm.
The fellow that was running Mutual was getting rid of everybody. He was a big union man. I say man, there weren't women then. So when I was fired, I just picked up the phone book and called everything that had radio in its name. I didn't know much about NPR, but they brought me over here and put me on the air that night.
Doing?
The 8 o'clock news insert within All Things Considered.
So you started off as a newscaster.
Uh-huh.
And how long did it take till you were co-anchor?
Oh, about 6 months. And that was February 74 when I started doing the newscast, and August when I started hosting.
What was All Things Considered like when you became the co-anchor?
Oh, gosh. You hear some of the tapes now, it's a bit embarrassing. We were, we only had five reporters. And we used a lot of station material, and a lot of it was very marginal. We did stories on quilting bees in Appalachia, and dulcimer makers, and a lot of commentary, and...
hamburger contests.
Oh, that was some years later when we got to the hamburger contest. It was very loose and very amateur. There would be the occasional brilliant piece of journalism surrounded by all this marginal material. And for me, it was a way station, just a place to draw a paycheck until I went out and found a real job. But I was doing it for about a year when I suddenly realized what we had there. We had the ability to do stories in great depth. It was an opportunity that a journalist would kill for, really, to have that much time to tell a story in detail. So finally I came around and I realized that I was really better off here than I was out busting my tail to do a minute 10 seconds on somebody's nightly newscast.
You've been at NPR for close to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you at all ambivalent about being with the same news organization for so long?
Well, in broadcasting, you're used to getting fired, and they don't fire me. I keep showing up, and they don't fire me, so I show up the next day. And so I'll keep doing that. I think, though, it worries me that I might have a lack of ambition or imagination that I continue to come back every day. I don't know.
What are the things that you love and that you hate about your work?
The hours are certainly in the I hate category. I love the fact that I can be involved in so many different subjects the way you are. That's one of the nice things about it. I think if I had to go to the Pentagon every day and talk to generals about weapons systems day in, day out, I think that would get very old. But to be able to talk to those generals and then to also talk to Jerry Garcia mm-hmm. is nice. And then to talk to a writer. And then back to another politician and an economist and a school teacher and a coal miner. And that keeps life interesting. And no 2 days are alike, and the news keeps changing. So it's refreshing.
It's very impressive the way you can hit the time clock and get out of an interview just in the nick of time. What are the polite ways of telling somebody that their time is up and you got to get out?
Well, you mean when we're live?
Yeah, when you're live.
And they're running long?
Right.
And you thought you were going to get the 30-second answer and you get the minute and a half answer?
Yes.
Well, I remember once when I asked one of those questions, and the person had been giving me nice, neat little 30-second answers, and then when I took a chance and thought I'd work one more in, he said, "And there are 5 reasons for this." And I said, "And we'd like to hear each and every one of them, unfortunately." But I think that's the one time I got out of it with any grace at all. Usually it's, Senator, we really have to, Senator, goodbye, Senator. It's 19 minutes past the hour. And it always sounds to the listener as if you're being malicious to that particular person.
Right.
You know,
that you showed your political bias and getting
exactly.
rid of them, yeah.
That apologist for Israel, you know. Or, you know, the senator was just making his point. You always let the other person on the other side have their time. You know.
All right. Well, Bob Edwards, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for talking with us.
A pleasure for me, too. Thank you.
Bob Edwards is the host of NPR's Morning Edition and the author of a new book about Red Barber called Fridays with Red. This is Fresh Air.